Afternoon.
Okay.
Have both of you signed in?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Mr. Ortega, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I can reserve 5 minutes.
Yes, sir, and you may begin whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, I said that I have to apologize first to the court in reviewing the materials for argument today. I did notice that there is a rather significant typographical error on page one of my reply brief. I do apologize, but I got the name of the defendant wrong. And, normally I don't allow that to happen, but I did notice it, and I do certainly apologize. This is a case that I think has two major issues. One would be whether what is required of a defendant under this statute if he has no information to give, and two, more generally, what is the timing and what is the phrase not later than mean. I think the easiest way to resolve this case would be to look at the first question first. And if we were to assume, arguendo, that there is a case in which a defendant has no information further to give, and I think we have to agree that is possible because the statute makes provision for it. In that case, where a defendant has no further information to give, what is he to do under the statute?
And that becomes really a credibility question, doesn't it?
It certainly is a credibility question for the court to determine whether they believe that or not. But I think the gateway question we have to ask is, what is required of the defendant in this case?
Mr. O'Gara, in a typical situation, defendant is either convicted or pleads guilty, and sentencing doesn't occur immediately. Sentencing is deferred, and it was here. And there's a period of time in which a defendant can, presumably with the advice of counsel, make a determination as to whether or not they have any information to offer that might help them at sentencing, whether it gets them out from under a minimum mandatory like this situation, or simply they get a low end of the guidelines kind of break or whatever. But it seems to me, given the language of this particular statute, the whole thrust is to give the Commonwealth enough notice of whatever information, or if you even the fact that you don't have any information, so that they can verify that or validate it and then address the court and say, we're satisfied they've done whatever they can to, there's nothing more they can offer. Or, conversely, we think, and we have reason to believe, that they know a lot more given their position in the organization or whatever it might be. And then the court makes its call. But here, the Commonwealth has been deprived of that opportunity because everyone has waited until literally the moment of sentencing to advance anything, whether it's truthful or not. And so it seems to me, you put your finger on the two issues, but certainly in terms of statutory construction, not later than the time of sentencing hearing means before the sentencing hearing, which means before you're actually in the sentencing hearing. Why isn't that an appropriate construction given what's obviously the purpose here?
We would certainly disagree with that. If they meant prior to or before the sentencing hearing, the General Assembly knows how to write that, and they clearly have, and I think I had analysis in the brief of just how many times they've used those phrases. They chose not to. Black's Law Dictionary defines not later than as included.
If we were to construe the statute the way you suggest, the Commonwealth has no opportunity to dispute anything. In other words, sentencing is going to take place, and the Commonwealth has no opportunity to either say he deserves it because he's cooperated or and given up whatever he needs, or there's nothing for him to give up or satisfy that there's nothing more to do here, or check out whatever information he does provide and ensure that it's truthful and that the court hasn't been misled. Because once the sentence has been imposed, it's pretty much too late, isn't it?
Well, I think there's certainly a mechanism for that. If the defendant chooses not to make any sort of statement or make any sort of proffer until the time of the sentencing, I think certainly the Commonwealth would be entitled to some sort of continuance in which they would have that opportunity. And I think all that they would have to do is say, well, Your Honor, this is the first we've heard of any of this. We would like a short continuance so that we may have an opportunity to do that. That is certainly within the power of the judge to do in controlling his docket. So to do it that way.
Why does that become the problem of the Commonwealth when the defendant chooses at the midnight hour to try to avail himself of an exception in the statute?
Well, frankly, I would argue that it becomes the Commonwealth's problem that way because that's the way the statute is written. Even on brief, the Commonwealth concedes that if he had made a proffer to the government 30 seconds before the moment of sentencing, it would have been timely. So that's one of the problems with that.
If it had been full and honest.
If it had been full and honest. But that's the thing.
Frankly, I'm not sure I would agree with the Commonwealth's concession in that regard. They can concede the law, but we're not bound by it.
But I think that's where you are. If you don't include the sentencing hearing as Black's Law Dictionary would, that's the opportunity where you can if you need more time, they can ask the court for more time if they want to speak to the court about that. That certainly creates an issue.
But I think your argument would be well taken if the statute said not later than the time of sentencing, but that's not what it says. It says not later than the time of the sentencing hearing.
It seems to me
the moment the hearing begins, now it's too late because it's not later than anymore.
Well, but as I said, the definition from Black's Law Dictionary specifically includes that. So if we're talking about the time of the sentencing hearing, I would argue that is from the time it starts to the time that it ends, because that's the time that the hearing is actually taking place. It is not taking place only at the moment it begins. It is taking place through the entire time of the sentencing hearing. Black's Law would argue that it includes that, so anything that happens. The problem is that, and certainly I would concede that the attorney handling this case could have done a much better job in making the proffer that we have nothing more. Something that had been done ahead of time would certainly have been a better practice. But the question in this case is, what does the statute require of a defendant if he has nothing to give? The only thing that the statute requires is, if he has any information, he must give it prior to. It does not say if you have no information, you must inform the Commonwealth of that prior to, or not later than. It simply says if you've got information, it has to be given prior to. That creates a situation for the defendant where if you have no information, it is impossible to comply with that because you can't give prior to a certain time what you don't have to give.
Except that he can tell his lawyer, when the lawyer says, look, there's an exception to this. If you don't want to be subject to the mandatory minimum, you spill your guts. Well, I've got nothing to spill. Well, then they won't get much when they come and debrief you, but at least let's reach out so that we've made sure that you comply with the statute.
I agree that that's excellent lawyering, but I would argue that that's not what the statute requires. I think the statute is very specific in what it requires, and it is the transfer of information before a certain time, whatever the court determines that to be. If there is no information to transfer, the statute actually requires nothing by its plain language, and that would be our position. Certainly, there are better ways to do it, but this is a penal statute, and that the case law requires it be strictly construed against the Commonwealth.
Mr. Aguirre, you're relying on Black's Law Dictionary, and you're a good lawyer, and I have a lot of respect for you. I think you know that. But I got to tell you, we actually checked, and you rely on the 6th edition. We're up to the 8th edition now, and that definition is not in the 8th edition. It is in the 6th edition, which you quote from in your brief. And so I'm not suggesting you've done anything wrong here. I don't mean to suggest that. But at some point, the editors of Black's Law Dictionary decided maybe the definition they gave in the 6th edition is not the one they want to put out there in the 8th edition. I just throw that out there for you.
That certainly could be the case. And certainly, perhaps they have done that in response.
We can use a legal dictionary, but when the General Assembly doesn't define a term, we typically use the ordinary meaning of the term. Not later than the time of the sentencing hearing. I mean, don't we have to give effect to each one of those words if we can?
I think you can do that under our definition because from the moment you start the sentencing hearing to the moment it finishes, all of those are the time of the sentencing hearing. The time of the sentencing hearing is not a millisecond time right before the hearing begins. It is from the time, a millisecond before the hearing begins up until the point where the hearing ends. And so I would argue that all of that is part. But even if we resolve it that way in the court's viewpoint, still, the statute does not require, if you have no information, it does not require a previous proffer. It doesn't require anything to put the Commonwealth on notice that you have more information. The strict words of the wording of the statute is, if there is information, it must be transferred. If there is no information, there is no instruction to the client whatsoever. This is part, unlike the federal guidelines statute, which
well,
is part of
procedural. Doesn't that get back to Judge Atlee's question earlier, which is that's a decision for the court to make. The court is the sentencing body, the sentencing authority, and it's going to determine if the minimum mandatory applies. There's a statutory relief to that minimum mandatory if you satisfy the trial court that you have provided information or you satisfy the trial court that there is no more information you can provide. Now, the Commonwealth, it seems to me, is entitled to weigh in on that before the court makes its decision about that because it's an adversary proceeding. And then the court has to make its call. Yes, you're telling the truth. No, you're not. And, you know, that's a credibility determination, which is obviously a very difficult bar to get over.
And if the court in this case had said, I've heard your proffer that you don't have anything. I've decided that I don't believe it, and that was the ruling. I think we would not have a leg to stand on very much in this case at all.
Well, did you get an adverse ruling on the timing issue because the court let trial counsel ask his question of the defendant, do you have anything, any information to supply to the Commonwealth on this?
I think that would be an appropriate sentencing question, whether the mandatory minimum was in play or not. So I don't believe the allowing of asking that question adds one thing or another. What I think is important is that the court did not say, I've looked at it, I've decided you haven't been fully, forthcoming and truthful, and so I'm not going to apply it. What he said was, you just can't come in here and say this and because then everybody else would get out. What that is a finding of is that the procedure that the defendant followed was problematic, not his content. Certainly, if he had said, sir, I've listened to what you've said, I don't believe you, I'm doing the mandatory minimum, that would be certainly within the discretion.
Well, of course, one of the things that hasn't been discussed here is this is all in the context of an Alford plea, and of course the nature of an Alford plea is you're not admitting nothing. You're pleading guilty because you think it's in your best interest. Your lawyer's convinced you at least it's in your best interest to do so, but you're really not admitting you've done anything, that you ought to be criminally responsible for.
I think that helps our case because
does it help though when he enters an Alford plea but then says at sentencing that he sold the drugs? Doesn't that inherently give him a credibility problem? I was maintaining my innocence all the way through, but yes, I admit that I sold the drugs. I just don't have any other information to provide.
Well, I don't think we ever hold it. I don't think it would be due process to be fair to ever hold it against a client in their plea to maintain their innocence. We don't. At a sentencing hearing, if he had pled not guilty, had his trial, and then spilled the beans afterwards, we would never go back and say, well, but he pled not guilty, so that we have to hold that against him. So I don't think the substance of his plea can be held against him later.
I think what Judge Atlee is getting at is when you. Typically, if you plead guilty and accept responsibility for your actions, that's a factor that helps you in sentencing.
Yes.
When you plead guilty and say, I'm not responsible for anything because it's an Alford plea and I really didn't do it. I really shouldn't be here, but the Commonwealth has me, painted into a corner here, so I'm going to plead guilty. Then, of course, if you say anything to the contrary, you're undercutting, that position you've taken at your guilty plea, and so it certainly does bear on credibility, it seems to me,
certainly.
In the abstract, and if it bears on credibility, then the court can obviously consider that.
Certainly, and if the court had made a credibility ruling in this case, I would agree with the court that is a problem and it's almost unsurmountable. But we're arguing here today that the court never ruled on the credibility of him not knowing anything else. He only ruled the procedure was not correct. You can't come in here today and just say that. As to the Alford plea generally, the ultimate case of not being able to give the Commonwealth any extra information is, in fact, if you are not guilty. If you are not the person who did this, you can, by definition, not give the Commonwealth any information about the crime. So just because there's an Alford plea generally, I don't think hurts the defendant in this argument. And as we would say that the court did not make a credibility ruling. What the court did was make a procedural ruling saying, you can't do it this way. And it, under that, we would argue that under the plain language of the statute, he can do it that way. Certainly there are options for the Commonwealth or the court if they want to look into it further, or if the court... One of the things is neither the Commonwealth or the court ask any questions of my client to determine his veracity.
But is it up to the Commonwealth to drag it out of him rather than the defendant to voluntarily provide that information when it's an exception he intends to rely upon?
But if the answer is, I have no information, you can't prove a negative.
Except from a realistic standpoint, we all know that's a disingenuous statement to make. He knows where he bought the drugs. He knows when he bought drugs. He knows where he was selling the drugs. He can give a description of the person from whom he was purchasing the drugs. All of those things we just know from the real world that he knows the answer to in some form or fashion.
But the Commonwealth may have that information already.
That's the point of the defendant disclosing that, is we don't know whether the Commonwealth has that information or not, and it's incumbent upon the defendant, if he wants to rely on that exception to avoid the mandatory minimum, to spill his guts.
I would argue that the clear language of the statute doesn't talk about, you know, spilling your guts.
I think we all get the point.
It's much fancier language to say spill your guts.
It's my version of legalese.
I would argue that under the strict construction of the statute, what it requires is if you have the extra information, you have to give it. And that there's no provision for what you have to do if you honestly don't.
See, I think a reasonable construction of the statute is if you want to get out from under this minimum mandatory sentence, you better cough up everything you know and hope you can convince the judge that you've done that, because otherwise it's 10 years, period.
Policy-wise, I would agree that it would probably be a wonderful way to put it, but the statute as it was written, we would just argue, is not how it's been.
I hear you, Mr. Rothman.
Ms. Fitzgerald.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald.
Please don't back us up by 3 hours.
I'll be brief, Your Honor. To read the code section that we're talking about, I believe it does impose an affirmative duty on the defendant. It says the defendant has to truthfully provide the government all information and evidence. It's an affirmative act. He has to be the one to provide it. Whether or not that
information... The default position is you get 10 years.
Correct, Your Honor. And whether or not the Commonwealth already has that information, he's not prejudiced because what he's providing is duplicative of what they already had. He's being rewarded for being truthful and forthcoming. In that regard, it's reasonable in this circumstance to construe this code section in accordance with the way the federal courts have done it. That language was in effect in the federal system for 10 years when it was adopted in the Virginia system. And as the Court has noted here today, it serves the purpose of the statute, which is, you know, to allow the Commonwealth to have an opportunity to make sure these are full, fair, truthful disclosures before we go into the sentencing hearing. And to do otherwise, we provide the defendant an opportunity for gamesmanship to come in at sentencing and provide information for the first time. So the trial court did not err in construing the statute this way, and I'm happy to answer specific questions from the Court.
No question.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, we will come down and greet counsel before we take up the last.